Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The number of initiatives out to expand diversity for women and women of color in television keep coming. Will they work out? We'll ask someone following these initiatives and the host of Turner Classic Movies' Trailblazing Women Festival, which kicked off its second season this week. Actress, writer, and director Ileana Douglas joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. At 10 p.m. tonight, WE TV raises the curtain on a key genre of Spanish-language TV, the telenovela. The truth showcased on My Life is a Telenovela may be as compelling as the genre itself. We'll connect with executive producer Todd Mubin later this hour. And we'll go back on the initiative trail next hour with Kiki Melendez, organizer of the first-ever multicultural sizzle reel event last Friday here in New York City. Los Angeles gets its turn next Thursday. Also ahead, the latest on Hurricane Matthew and its impact on television so far, and At Midnight Stays on Comedy Central. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. More details later in the program. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the program All About Television. 75 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. We have a big 90 minutes in store for you, and yes, we will have shortly the latest on Hurricane Matthew, including how it is making already an impact on the TV world. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests over the next hour and a half, give us a ring and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a chat room open as well. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you get heard. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Ileana Douglas will be live with us from Los Angeles after this update on the hurricane and some news notes. Here's the latest track of Hurricane Matthew at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. It is still a powerful Category 3 hurricane. The eye of the storm is about 41 miles east-northeast of Daytona Beach, Florida. Jacksonville, Florida is getting very hard at this hour because of the storm surge. The winds currently are 115 miles per hour, gusting to 140 miles an hour. The movement has slowed down by only a fraction. It's moving north-northwest at 12 miles per hour. Earlier in the day, it was about 13 miles per hour. Right now, the track of the storm does encourage it to make a northeasterly bend. It looks like it is going to hit the Georgia coastline tonight, early tomorrow morning, and it may hit landfall in Charleston, South Carolina, in and around that area around 8 a.m. tomorrow Eastern Time. By the way, in the last hour, the North Carolina coastline has been issued a hurricane warning. And if you're in the northern half of North Carolina or Southern Virginia, you are not out of the woods. In some areas, it is raining and raining heavily. That is the latest on Hurricane Matthew. Now some news notes associated with it. Production of Underground's second season of WGN America remains on hiatus this afternoon. Filming was suspended yesterday in and around Savannah, Georgia, due to Hurricane Matthew. The storm is expected to hit that area late tonight and tomorrow before perhaps making landfall near Charleston, South Carolina. It is not known when Underground will resume production. Separately, Matthew impacted ABC's taping of next week's The Two episodes for Walt Disney World Epcot Center. Producers there moved up their taping timetable to get all five episodes wrapped by Wednesday night. Shortly after, Walt Disney World and other Orlando, Florida attractions were closed until further notice. And that's not the only Matthew TV consequence for the House of Mouse. ESPN was left with an opening in tomorrow's college football-dominated afternoon with the LSU Florida game cancellation. That gap between noon and 3:30 p.m. Eastern time will be filled by the Auburn vs. Mississippi State game that was originally set to run on sister channel SEC Network. And on a separate note, Chris Hardwick's late-nightly job, a.k.a. At Midnight, will keep playing through 2017 on Comedy Central. That will make four seasons of the West-spun comedian competition, and for now, the series will continue to run right after The Daily Show with Trevor Noah just after 11:30 p.m. local time. And that's news notes for today. And before again we get to Ileana, one reminder, if you or other people you know are in the area of the Upper Florida coastline, Georgia, North and South Carolina, please move to higher ground if you can. You still have time, but time is wasting. This is a brunt of a storm, so much so that when it hits Georgia and North South Carolina sometime tomorrow, it will still pack winds of over 100 miles an hour, maybe up to 15 inches of rain in particular areas, and a big, big storm surge situation, which could top, in some markets, 10 feet. So if you know people in this area, please let them know, don't take this lightly. You are not out of the woods. If you can, move to higher ground, get into shelters ASAP. And now joining us SAP from Los Angeles, actress, writer, director, and the host of the second annual Turner Classic Movies Trailblazing Women Festival, now on Tuesday and Thursday nights, the rest of October, Ileana Douglas. Ileana, it's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. You talk very quickly.
I do. It's a habit. I'll try to slow down at least over the next half hour. And thanks for bearing with me, Ileana, given what we have to talk about with Eric and Matthew.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here to talk about our second season of Trailblazing Women on Turner Classic Movies, the channel I love.
And let's talk about that first. How's it been going? You're 1 week in. What kind of feedback are you getting from the viewers there?
Well, it's always so inspiring. I mean, again, what, you know, just for listeners who don't know what the show is, it's a multi-year initiative that Turner Classic Movies has started along with Women in Film in LA to draw attention to female filmmakers, actresses, directors, writers, producers, et cetera. Last year, we took a look at about 50 films directed by female directors. And again, asking currently, why aren't there more female directors? And this year, the focus is on social and historical contributions of actresses. Again, going back to the silent career through war service, public service, activism. And again, asking currently today, you know, why are actresses an endangered species? Why are actresses being marginalized when there's so much social good that they could be doing things on our behalf. So it's a very entertaining show, and we have amazing co-hosts. Last night was Bette Midler, which she was just incredible, talking about people who create their own destiny. Of course, she's created her own destiny. And coming up, we've got Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, Dana Delaney, Jane Alexander, Lee Grant. So we've got some incredible co-hosts coming up to talk about actresses.
And these are actresses and women who one way or another made a difference, not just behind the camera, whether it was, as you say, controlling their own destiny in terms of the projects they selected or the projects they themselves produced, wrote, or directed, but also getting involved with social activism, getting involved with social causes, in some cases working through the blacklist, as was the case with Lee Grant. And even people who, behind the scenes, are dealing with how do we increase the technology that allows for more production by people, by women and women of color.
Exactly. Those are all the things that are, you know, that come up so that when, you know, you have somebody, you know, of the stature of a Bette Midler talking about Marilyn Monroe, you know, trying to fight within the studio system, becoming a producer herself, Mae West, again, writing, directing, producing. Why isn't she in the pantheon that Charlie Chaplin is? You know, that question alone. You know, she created an image for herself. You know, she saved Paramount in the 30s and then started to experience intense censorship the more she became successful. Katharine Hepburn, who also, you know, fought back producing her own material. Olivia de Havilland, whose lawsuit against Warner Brothers ended the 7-year contract system, something that we all now follow in show business. So these aren't small accomplishments. These are huge accomplishments. And so what we're asking currently is, again, if we're marginalizing actresses, think of all the missed opportunities that we have as a society.
I wasn't thinking this later, but I'll do it now. Ever since the Oscars and the big Oscar So White campaign, because of the lack of women of color in acting categories and in other categories too, we're seeing all these projects happen. We for She, the Alice Institute, We Did It Together, Rose McGowan, the former Charmed co-star, the project called Presenting Women. Women in Film has the project with the blacklist, trying to get pilots by women and women of color. We have some initiatives now from the New York Mayor de Blasio's Office of Film and Television, and we'll have Julie Menon, by the way, the commissioner of that agency, on our show later this month to talk about them. What do you make of all these efforts that have come up in the wake of the Oscars? Do you find it ironic that a lot of it is television as opposed to film?
Well, you know, what, our first night we did the business of film and television, and there we demonstrated where people like Lucille Ball and Mary Tyler Moore, when their film careers were floundering, you know, moved to television. So television always seems to have been an option for, you know, for women to work. And what I think about these initiatives is I think that they're I think they're fantastic. I think that the conversations after a long hibernation are finally happening. We're acknowledging that there's a problem here. We're acknowledging that there aren't enough stories about women. You know, but here we go. We're at the beginning of the ride. So we have to ensure that the stories are good, that they're handled well, that they get good publicity, that it's not just a public service like at corporations, so that they say, great, fantastic, we checked all the boxes of all our gender initiatives, now let's do something else. I mean, we have to really follow through on this. I mean, I'm a person, as a, you know, as a comedian and a writer myself, I don't like to think of the idea as separate stories for men and women. You know, there was a time where people would go see the movie and it didn't matter, you know, if Faye Dunaway was the star or Jane Fonda was the star. It was in, it was, you know, they were starring alongside a major actor. Now what we're seeing is that women are being marginalized in films. So I'd like to see a time where we're not specifically referring to a film that stars a woman with a female director as a woman's film.
Mm-hmm. What's fascinating, though, about all of these projects is, number one, the initiatives and how versatile they are. In fact, later on in the program, we're going to have Kiki Melendez, who last Friday launched her own initiative, bought her own production company, Latin Hollywood Films, made 10 pilots for proposed TV series, all featuring people of color, Latinos, and especially women of color, had them screened here in New York at a ceremony. They're going to Los Angeles, where you are, next Thursday, October 13th,
mm-hmm.
Multicultural Sizzle Reel up front. You have a project, Her, which is all about mentoring, pairing promising women filmmakers with directors like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Rose McGowan doing Presenting Women, where she will pick a promising script about a female protagonist, female heroine, and then produce that pilot and show it at Series Fest, the up-and-coming TV festival in Denver next spring. So it's interesting how all these different projects are getting into this. They're not all going the same path. They're, like, spreading it out so that whether it's writing or directing or producing or financing, there's a project out there that is addressing that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it could be that things are changing, and yet 2016, you do have to look at the films, top films of 2016, continue to be Captain America, Star Trek, Batman, you know, Star Wars. So you're still, you know, these are still predictably male-based, male-driven audience-type movies. So we just have to see. It all sounds fantastic on paper, and it might genuinely be that things are really beginning to change, you know. So we'll have to see. We've had these moments before, and then it's kind of like they, you know, they sort of pan out. I mean, in the 90s, you know, I was working with all sorts of female directors, and there was a great initiative to support women filmmakers, but then there came kind of a backlash to that, and it all sort of ended. So we're in this new spirit again, and I hope it continues, you know. I really hope so. It's great to work. I don't want to be an endangered species.
Absolutely. And by the way, another news note I should have mentioned, we have a new person at the head of ABC in comedy, Jamila Hunter, who was just appointed to that role a couple of hours ago. We're speaking with Ileana Douglas. She is the comedian, actress, writer, director, producer, and the host of Turner Classic Movies' second annual Trailblazing Women Festival, put on the Association of Women in Films Los Angeles chapter. It's going on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The evening begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, but throughout those days, films put together by women featuring women actresses is amazing. Green Festival, you did see it last year, was really inspiring, and this year is already off to a great start. And Eliana joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and Apple Band with you live from the other coast of New York. Happy to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Eliana, get into the conversation. Use this number, 646-652-2906, or get into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We welcome guests 915 and 924 into the room. We have three more episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised next week, Monday, Columbus Day, Tuesday, and Friday, all at the same time. And coming up on Monday's episode, Epics, the pay cable network, a week from Sunday, is launching its first two scripted television programs. We've got the first of them on Monday, the second of them on Friday. The one on Monday is Grave, starring Nick Nolte and the next president, who may be off the deep end more than he and we think. We will have the creator executive producer, Josh Michael Stern. And then we have a team involved with a Funnier Guys project called F-D, which is being showcased later this month at the New York Television Festival. And the names are Ryan Gallen and Julia Lockenheim-Gimple. But here's the thing. Unlike most entries, which are basically pilots, their program is running, and you can find it on Funny or Die through smart TVs or smart TV devices. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Ileana, of all the people you have on this month, who is most interesting or the most you learned from when you interviewed them?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, Gene Fonda has been such an inspiration to me my whole life, watching her on screen, of course, and also watching her transition as a woman throughout her career. You know, when she changed, her films changed. And so, you know, you look at an actress who was starring in movies like Barefoot in the Park, and then completely changed herself up and was doing films like Clute and then getting involved with activism, and you have films like Coming Home and The China Syndrome, which is one of the films we show. And then now to see her back on television with Lily Tomlin in that show Frankie and Johnny, you know, it's that's really inspiring. That is an amazing career to look at. Bette Midler, of course, again, just about to start on Broadway. These are people that have had longevity in their careers. Rita Moreno, you know. So I have the most respect. And, of course, Lee Grant, who actually went through the blacklist and will discuss her own story and talk about, you know, examined careers of other actresses that were not as fortunate as she was. I mean, one of the actresses we profile is a Mexican actress named Rosario Revoltes, who did a movie in 1954, Salt of the Earth. This remains the only film that was banned by the U.S., and this actress was deported for appearing in this film because it was a pro-union film. And so when we watch a film like that, it's important to remember that this could be happening again. It is currently in the news. So it's an entertaining show, and it's a thoughtful show, but we also ask provocative questions about the state of art in our country currently. So it's hard to pick out a favorite. You know, they were all my favorites, and our two historians, you know, also offered a lot of insight. Emily Carmen talking about actresses who gave up their careers to sell war bonds, and, you know, Hedy Lamarr developing what was called a spread spectrum radio technology, which helped in the war effort. So these are all things that, as actresses, we can really be proud of, you know, that their actresses are more than a pretty face. You know, they're really, really intelligent people. And I think that part of the reason they gravitate towards being actresses is that they have something to say and something to contribute to society.
Mm-hmm. One other episode that really struck me, because it deals with having more than one life beyond the camera, is the episode you have with Jane Alexander. I've been a Jane Alexander fan for years, ever since her breakthrough performance on film in The Great White Hope opposite James Earl Jones. Eleanor
yes.
Franklin, to which she won the Emmy Award for, one of the best miniseries, by the way, I've ever seen, and still tremendous.
Yes.
And she deals with this whole issue of people who had secondary careers. I mean, people we know, like Shirley Temple Black, became an ambassador, a diplomat for Ghana. Some might
yep.
know, for example, about Glenda Jackson, the brilliant British actress, Best Actor winner for one of the most offbeat Best Actress winners for a film. A lot of people didn't know about Cool Women in Love, but a lot of people may not know,
yes,
for example, Gina Lollobrigida, who was just featured on Turner Classic Movies a few months ago, was a Goodwill Ambassador for the United,
yes,
Nations. And I think that's fascinating,
yes,
or that Alexander herself has had a great career as the former chairman of the National Endowment of the Arts.
Well, yes, it was, and Jane Alexander was, you know, a contemporary of my grandfather's, Melvin Douglas, so it was, again, her great theatrical background, and she had so much to contribute, you know, just her talking about, you know, one of the actresses that we featured, Nancy Reagan, then Nancy Davis, and her whole relationship of being sort of the power behind the power of Ronald Reagan, and how, you know, it's hard to imagine sitting with somebody like Jane Alexander, where this was a woman whose body of work spoke for itself, and so she was chosen to run the National Endowment of the Arts in part because of the role model she was in some of her film work. And so it's difficult to imagine an actress currently being asked to run the National Endowment of the Arts. And so we have to examine, well, why is that? Is it because we don't take actresses seriously, or is it because they can't have enough of a body of work so that we get to really know what they stand for? So those are the two things that we're examining. As we're marginalizing them, we're losing these opportunities. And somebody like Jane Alexander, again, you know, you have to smile when I'm driving around L.A. and I see all these banners for a Robert Mapplethorpe exhibit, when Jane Alexander in the 90s was in the most heated arguments of the history of the National Endowment of the Arts when they were trying to shut her down because she wanted to fund a Robert Mapplethorpe exhibit. So, you know, it's interesting to go back and examine history and just see how much she brought to that discussion. And we can't get complacent here, you know.
Mm-hmm. One of the big television success stories in recent months has been Ava DuVernay, the Selma producer, writer, director, doing Queen Sugar for the Oprah Winfrey Network. And it is, in a major way, a groundbreaking development, because that series is the first scripted television series in the history of this medium, where all the episodes were directed by women, and the majority by women of color. And it's going to a second season. They've just hired a woman of color who's going to be the showrunner, because Ava DuVernay is working on Wrinkle in Time, the great adaptation of that marvelous family book.
Yeah, Ava DuVernay.
I'm curious, have you heard any buzz about, you know, about that series and opening up? And I guess it raised the other question, too, of, we know that diversity is something, whether it's TV or film, that there's no silver bullet, not one action that's going to do it. You have to attack it on every level, the studio level, the TV show level, the movie level, the guild level, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What's your sense of how we're progressing? And if it's not silver bullet, is there like maybe one or two actions that would further things along faster than others for you?
Well, I mean, in this particular case, the muscle behind this is Oprah Winfrey. And so this goes back to my original argument. If there's no more Oprah Winfreys, you know, who's going to be the muscle to get these shows greenlit? Because, you know, the money has to be there. Somebody has to step up to the plate and vouch for these female filmmakers and say, listen, they can handle this project. I'm going to finance it. I'm going to promote it. Oprah Winfrey is a huge, huge powerhouse for women's issues. But so that is fantastic. But what I'm thinking in the back of my mind is, okay, but if we marginalize women, who's going to be the next Oprah Winfrey? You know, who? That's what we should be currently grooming, I think, in addition to having these great powerhouses like, you know, the Barbra Streisands and the Gina Davises. But we also have to be grooming the next people in line. And sometimes, you know, my own particular feeling is, you know, it can't just be the 25-year-olds. It has to be the 40 and 50-year-olds who are struggling also, you know, because a lot of the times what we learned last year in the show is that, you know, you had these female directors that they would do one or two movies and then they would never have the opportunity to direct again, you know. And those are the people that it's great that we're giving some of these young people an opportunity. But, boy, it also would be nice to be giving, you know, the Penelope Spheerises a chance to direct again. You know, people that had proven track records, but somewhere along the way, and I don't know if that's ageism, but somewhere along the way, they stopped being able to get work.
And that's why it's important to watch out for people like a Jamila Hunter or Channing Duguay, who is the new head of ABC Entertainment, or someone like Jennifer Salk, who heads primetime programming at NBC on the TV side of things, as well as people at places like Lionsgate or Warner Brothers, et cetera, or, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, it feels like an exciting time. It feels like climate is right where, again, you know, and that's why it's so great to be hosting the show, because I feel like, you know, the initiative wasn't just a one-off. It's a multi-year initiative, so we can talk about accomplishments that we did last year. A lot of the films that we discussed last year, some of them that were in complete obscurity, were put into the Library of Congress for preservation. Women film directors are starting to work more. So through entertainment, you know, we're showing this kind of positive message. And I think it's the same thing with actresses this year. This overwhelming evidence of all these great actresses that have contributed so much. And it makes you, you know, I mean, me alone, I'm watching the show at home, and I'm thinking, God, I love seeing Bette Midler on television. I want to see, you know, I just love seeing these people. I like seeing myself on television. I like to see more of myself. You know, I think that people that we know and that have been role models for us, there has to be more opportunities to put them in films and television projects, you know, and it is a challenge because we're making less and less of these kind of movies. So that's something to think about too, you know.
And ironically, this is what's getting some of those people who are making films in the television, because they see, oh, it's the superhero movie or the science fiction film, the spectacular film or the slasher film, whatever, that the studios for the most part are interested in, and that may be, you know, that in a way of encouraging an Ava DuVernay to go to Oprah Winfrey and do Queen Sugar, or John Ridley, for example, do American Crime, and through that program on ABC have women all over the place as executive producers, as writers, as directors, as the director of photography this year was a woman, Lila Wiglin, who I thought should have been up for an Emmy Award, by the way, for her work on that show. So you're seeing,
yes,
in a way, it's sort of the fact that the studios are looking at these kind of films and saying there isn't much room for anybody else is encouraging, in a way, a lot of independent filmmakers to see television as maybe their role to go. And we're also seeing, it looks like, a lot of people not only create shows for television, but get the chance to run the show, which is a very big deal.
Yeah, that's in terms of TV, that is a big deal. And the climate is, you know, the climate is great for that. And I think that hopefully, again, this will continue to be the norm. The only thing I think that could potentially ruin it, as I said, was this, what we experienced with the death of the romantic comedy, was the backlash that, oh, these are chick flicks, they're underperforming, men aren't going to see them. You know, none of this really was specifically true or proven. It just became, you know, that became the message. So that's the thing that, you know, you have to kind of watch out for, that there's not this backlash of like, well, those, see, we tried, but hey, audiences don't want to see these kind of movies, which is not necessarily true, but it does become a kind of a narrative.
Before we let you go, Liana, any TV projects in your future, and what would you like to see Turner Classic Movies do for year three of Showbizing Women?
Oh, gosh. Well, for year three, I mean, who knows? The sky's the limit. I personally would love to see some of the background, some of the editors like that we know, the female editors, you know, women who work behind the scenes, female editors like Thelma Schoonmaker and Dee Dee Allen, Edith Head, of course, who ran Paramount, who created looks for Paramount, Alma Hitchcock, who was like, again, the power behind behind Alfred Hitchcock. There's so many influential female producers, you know, people that I've worked with myself, Laura Ziskin, you know, that we could highlight. So I think that, again, that's an important narrative behind the scenes of women who maybe didn't get a lot of credit, but really were calling the shots. So that could be something, you know, that's very interesting. So that's what I'm hoping for, but who knows? And, hopefully we'll go beyond our three-year mark, because I think there's so many avenues that we could go in, you know, women of horror, comedy women, you know what I mean? I would love to see this just become a yearly show where we celebrate female filmmakers, actresses, behind-the-scenes people and their contribution. So that's what I would like to see.
If you go that route, in year three, I got two choices for you. Verna Fields, who won the Oscar for Jaws, a fantastic film editor, and Joan Harrison, who was the producer of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, who really was the brain behind that show, along with Alfred Hitchcock, and guided for all its run in the 50s and 60s.
Yes, she certainly, she would be a great candidate. I would also throw, as I'm thinking about it, Polly Platt, who assisted, you know, Peter Bogdanovich on many of his early films, creating a look for those kind of films. I would say some really, really influential casting directors, like Sis Corman, who worked very closely. Now she runs Barbara Streisand's company. So many women behind the scenes that we could highlight that really, I think, would be kind of fun to talk about.
That for sure. And when dropping names, but why not? I'd also throw in, if you want to cover animation, the woman who animated some of the Pixar films or some of the DreamWorks films. The name escapes me, but Vanessa Coffey, who was the Nickelodeon executive who green-lighted the original shows Rugrats, Ren and Stimpy Show, and Doug back 25 years ago, which really changed the face of animation on television with the beginning of those three shows. Amazing cast.
Well,
still around.
Yeah, we highlighted the first night that it was Lucille Ball who greenlit Star Trek. She was the first woman who ran a studio. So I think, again, amongst the comedy and Lucille Ball, that's pretty impressive.
You can do a whole night on Desi Lou, which is, of course, the studio that Lucille Ball ran. And you could also add some of the women she had behind the scenes, like Madeline Davis, who was one of the key writers on I Love Lucy, December Bride, a lot of the comedies, Eve Arden, Artemis Brooks,
mm-hmm.
Who had a great say both with her character but also behind the scenes. There's a whole bunch of things. We could drop names forever. And unfortunately, we got through that. For sure. Anyway, Trailblazing Women. If you have not seen this festival on Turner Classic Movies, please make it your business to do so. It is marvelous. It's on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, with films running throughout the day, both days of the week. And again, that's on Turner Classic Movies. Check your local for TCM, which is one of the best networks of any kind on the air. I might add, I'm a big fan of the network. I have been from the start. Check your local for TCM is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the festival and TCM in general, here's where you go online, TCM.com. That's TCM.com. Check out their Watch TCM app. It's magnificent, too. And like I said, I've said for years, if you want one place where you can find movies, including movies you don't know that you will love, and see them in a great setting, Turner Classic Movies is the best, bar none. Ileana Douglas, thank you so much for coming on. I wish we had you on longer. We've got to have you back. And it really is a pleasure to have you on for the first time. And Congratulations on the festival and how it's going.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. All the best to you. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too. So long.
Take care. Simon Applebaum with you, and that's Ileana Douglas, live from Los Angeles this half hour and change right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We'll have more Tomorrow Will Be Televised for you shortly after the bottom of the hour, but right now, let's give you some thoughts on the fine people at Audible.com. Denzel Washington is making a lot of news lately with his performance in The Magnificent Seven, one of the top movies right now, but he's also making news in the world of audio. Why? Because he's coming out with a brand new audio book about Jamaican folk tales. It's called Anansi, which he narrates, and you can hear him and these wonderful tales right now with a subscription to Audible.com. Audible.com is a division of Amazon.com that provides spoken digital audio entertainment and information all over the place, with over 180,000 titles to choose from. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of their service. And if you haven't tried their service yet, it is marvelous. Great choice, great quality, and great customer service, because you know that with Amazon.com behind it, it is top of the line. So make today the day that you get involved in the world of audio entertainment and be touched, moved, and inspired by it. All you got to do is sign yourself up for that 30-day trial and that free audiobook, whether it's Anansi by Denzel Washington or anything else. Here's the place to go, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, a great way to sound from Amazon.com. This is Bobby Televised. We are the program All About the Tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up shortly, we've got Todd Rubin, the executive producer of My Life as a Telenovela. And we will get to him after we pause for web identification. You are connected to the best episode and the best programming on radio anywhere in the mundo. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. Well, there's 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for In the Neon Spotlight Radio. Music from all over the world comes to one place. In the Neon Spotlight. Check it out, Fridays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's the BTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised, 90-day edition underway. Happy to have you with us Friday afternoon. If you're in the area of Hurricane Matthew or you know people who are, please let them know. Get out of the area, whether it is the upper coast of Florida, the coast of Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. That storm is moving up your way, and it looks like it's going to hit Georgia late tonight, and the South Carolina coastline maybe even make landfall around 8 a.m. tomorrow morning before heading out to sea probably Sunday between what it looks like right now, dawn and noon Eastern time. So please, if you know people in the area, please let them know. Don't take this lightly. Get out of harm's way. Sooner you do, sooner the better. Go to a shelter. Go inland. Make your move now because it may be too late in just a matter of hours. We'll have an update for you on Hurricane Matthew at the top of the hour. Meantime, this Friday night, WeTV is giving us all a treat. They're letting us take a peek into a form of television that's been around for, well, as long as Spanish language TV has been around, and it continues to be popular. So popular that we have seen in the last, decade and a half or so, it's being translated in English with such programs as Ugly Betty, Jane the Virgin, and more recently, Queen of the South on USA Network. It's the telenovela. And the program we're talking about is on WeTV at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. It's called My Life is a Telenovela. And joining us live from New York, the executive producer, Todd Rubin. Todd, welcome in. Are you there? I guess not. All right. Todd, if you understand my voice, please give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple048. Maybe you have a question or comment for Todd, or for Kiki Melendez from the Multicultural Disney World Partner, who will join us around the top of the hour. You use that number too, 646-652-2906, or our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televised, and guest 915 is in the room. Let's see if Todd is now with us. Todd, are you there? Todd Rubin and My Life is a Telenovela. Where are you? Okay. Well, we will see if Todd can pick us up. Todd, if you can, if you're checking us out, or maybe WeTV is on the line, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and communicate with us and find out where Todd is at. We're expecting him any moment now. While we're waiting, again, let's give you the update on Hurricane Matthew. This is as of the National Weather Center at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, over an hour and a half ago. Hurricane Matthew is a Category 3 storm. It is now off the coast of Daytona Beach, Florida. That's the eye of the storm, about 40, 41 miles east-northeast. The winds now are sustained at over 115 miles an hour, gusting to 140 miles an hour. The movement has slowed a little bit, not that much little, moving north-northwest at 12 miles per hour. But it is expected to make a more northerly path than a northeast path within the next 6 to 12 hours, then continue to skirt along the coastline, upper Florida, then Georgia, and then South Carolina and North Carolina by Sunday a.m. Again, if you know people who are in the area of the storm, particularly along the coastline, have them get out of wherever they are, get on the road to inland or to a local shelter or to a local hotel or other accommodation inland. But the sooner you do, the sooner the better. This is not a storm to take chances on. We have already had reports of at least one death in Florida from a cardiac arrest. Over 300 people dead in Haiti. No word yet on what took place in the Bahamas through last night and earlier this morning. So this is a storm that is a brute. It is packing a punch. It may not be the most catastrophic on record, but with storm surge in particular, and maybe in some areas up to 15 inches of rain, it is a major league storm not to play around with. So please, if you know people in the area, friends, loved ones, et cetera, have them get out. We should point out, by the way, that down in Florida, the Miami airport, Miami, I'm happy to say, got by, relatively speaking, compared to other areas in Florida, the Miami International Airport is reopened. However, there have been thousands of flights canceled or delayed. So if you are leaving the Miami area, check with your local carrier. Your flight might not be happening. And that also goes for rail and subway and mass transit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not just in Miami, but in other parts of Florida, whether it's Jacksonville, Daytona Beach, West Palm Beach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're listening to us in northern North Carolina or southern Virginia, you are not out of the woods. We know in some places in North Carolina, you've got some of the hurricanes rain bands, some of which are very, very heavy. And then the same thing for southern Virginia around the Norfolk area, Chesapeake Bay. If you don't have it now, you will have it probably tonight or first thing tomorrow morning. So this is a hurricane that is very powerful. It may not be Category 4 or 5, but Category 3 can be devastating depending on where you are. So we really encourage you to please, if you're in that coastal area or know people who are, get out of there as quickly as possible. And also check, continue to stay tuned to your local radio and television stations, the Weather Channel, weather.com, Weather Nation, et cetera, for all the latest information. The next hurricane update is at 5 p.m. local time. And I'm sure many of our Block Talk radio hosts and producers will keep you informed about what is going on throughout the rest of the day, tonight, tomorrow, and through the remainder of the weekend. And once again, I want to welcome guest 915 into our chat room. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call or use the room at SimonApple04 at SimonApple04. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televod, our homepage. Or you can check it out at our phone number, 646-652-296. Let's see if Todd Rubin from My Life in Televale is currently on the line. Todd, are you there? Hello, Todd. Guess not. Okay, we'll keep trying, and we're expecting at the top of the hour to hear from Kiki Melendez, who is the actress, talk show host, and the organizer of the Multicultural Sizzle Reel Fun, a very special event, groundbreaking event, in fact, that took place here in New York last Friday, a week ago, and will be in Los Angeles next Thursday, October 13th. So while we're in a moment, let's tell you about who's coming up on Tomorrow Be Televised in the week or so ahead. We've got three episodes coming your way, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, all at this very time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up next week, we will have both of the new programs, new scripted programs and first ever scripted, that Epix, the pay cable network, will be launching a week from Sunday. One of them is called Graves. It's about an ex-president who is, recalculating his life in also unusual ways, played by Nick Nolte. We will have on Monday, as our lead guest, the creator executive producer, Josh Michael Stern. And then we'll have the creator executive producer, the one of the pilots, in the competition at the New York Television Festival. The pilot is called F-D. You might know what it stands for, but in any event, it's all about three people who, in the Dr. Strange Love parlance, learn to stop worrying and love living in RV post the apocalypse. And their names are Ryan Dolan and Julia Washington Gimple. They're the great executive producers and also stars. But what makes this particular entry of the New York TV Festival interesting is that it is a series. It's currently available through Funny or Die on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And they'll be with us again next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Coming up in our special Tuesday episode, we got terrific guests for you. The director of the new National Geographic Channel made-for-TV movie, Killing Reagan, that is also premiering on Sunday night, Rod Lurie, very popular movie and TV director. He was also the creator of the series on ABC 7 years back with Gina Davis, Commander-in-Chief, and we'll also talk to him about a new project he is working a pilot on as both writer-director for TNT, Monsters of God. Rod Lurie from Killing Reagan and Monsters of God, live with us exclusive next Tuesday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here on Tomorrow We Tell It. I believe we now do have Todd Lubin, the executive producer of WeTV's My Life is a Televangelist on the line. Todd, are you there?
Is that me? I think that's me.
That is you.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Hello. Hi, it's actually, I'm one of the other executive producers of the show. Todd couldn't make it. I called in. This is Jerry Carita.
Great to hear you. And how do you say the last name, by the way, last name?
Carita, Carita.
Great. Jerry, how did this process, this program happen, and what are we going to look at starting tonight into the world of telenovelas?
Oh, Lord. Well, what started out as the idea was, you know, all these shows on TV that are sort of like a housewives-style show. There's Basketball Wives and, you know, Rap Star Wives and Preacher's Wives and all these shows like that. So we were looking for something in the telenovela world. We thought, what about all these women who are on telenovelas? So the initial idea was, let's find some actresses and some of these people who are in this world and start following them around with cameras. And what ended up happening is they're hilarious. All their real lives are more dramatic and more insane than anything that happens on their soap operas. And so we kind of leaned into it with the show. So when you watch the show, you know, all of the drama is hyper dramatic and all of the funny stuff is hyper funny. It's just everything to like an 11. Everything you see on any one of those housewives shows or any other of these reality shows, it's like this, it's like that to an 11. And so tonight it's the beginning. It's basically, you know, this one actress, Racanel, it comes to Miami to audition for a role, and it seems very simple, except Racanel has this really dark past where she spent 5 years in jail in South America for a crime that she, you know, says that she didn't commit. And there's all this intrigue around people trying to find out about her dark past. It's literally like a soap opera where someone shows up and they have like an evil twin sister they don't know about. You know, she's got like this dark, twisted past that she has never spoken about. It's a true story. It's a real thing that happened in her past. And she wins this role on a telenovela, and it kind of turns all the lives of everyone else involved upside down.
Did you and your fellow producers expect this world of telenovelas to be that hyper?
We were surprised. I mean, we thought we were doing like a fun twist on, you know, like an all women's show. We did not expect it to be as funny and as, you know, so dramatic. Like, so it's been surprising even for us. They're so much fun, and it's so weird. It's like real life stabbing each other in the back and real life. The competition over these roles is really intense because I don't know how much you guys know about telenovelas. They shoot them very, very quickly. They shoot them like twice as quickly as we shoot American soap operas. They air one time and then they go away forever. And, you know, it's not like they're available on DVDs and stuff like that. So it's super, super, super competitive. And there's like one season during the year where they cast everybody. And then if you don't get a role, you're out. So it's super competitive. And, We didn't know. We didn't get it. Like, you know, I'm saying that to you, and you're listening to me say, oh, yeah, it's competitive. We get it. But when you see it, it's psychotic how fast they make the shows and how much these actors need the roles to survive. You know, they're there specifically to get these roles in these shows. And if they don't, they could be out of work for months at a time, and some of them have families and, you know, things that they need to work. So it's very, very competitive. It's kind of crazy.
And for those people who still don't know, years later after Spanish Fairy Tale has finally come of age here in the United States, what it's all about. The telenovela is a drama that usually runs 100 to 130 episodes. And it's a one-time thing. Although, in recent years, we've had Telemundo launch what's called the Super Series, which are these action-adventure-oriented series. They run at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time. They are 60 episodes each, but they run in multiple seasons, which means unlike a regular telenovela where it's a one-and-done, basically, unless it's so popular that they decide, let's make another season of it, these super series like El Señor Cielo, El Señor del Cielo, et cetera, can go like three or four seasons, and they get more and more popular every time. In fact, the telenovela you highlighted is from Telemundo, which in recent years has started to challenge Univision, the top Spanish language network, for dominance both in telenovelas and also in Spanish language viewing.
Yeah, we're doing the show that the women on the show, so they all auditioned for a real telenovela. Everything we film a lot on the Telemundo set. They were our partners in producing the show. So you see a lot of behind the scenes stuff of how the shows are created, how the things that we as an American audience see, you know, clips of like Spanish television. It's kind of like always a joke because it's this over the top stuff where there's every interaction between two women is hair pulling and a cat fight. Every, you know, it's all men slapping women across the face, or there's lots of sex, like just a crazy amount of sex. And so what we get to see on our show is you see a lot of them making the telenovela. Once Rocinelle gets the role, you know, a couple of the other characters have passing roles in the show, and we spend a lot of time with them on set, you know, and you kind of see behind the scenes what is the anatomy of a cat fight? You know, how do you film a cat fight for a soap opera, for a Spanish soap opera, and make it look real? So you kind of get a behind the scenes look at the real making of telenovelas as like a backdrop to all the drama and craziness in these women's lives.
Jerry Colina is one of the executive producers of My Life is a Telenovela. It's WeTV's new original series and it premieres tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on that channel, part of the AMC Networks. And Jerry joins us live here in New York on Tomorrow We Televise This F Hour. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New Web, New York. Happy to have you with us Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Jerry, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, guest 915 in the room. Remember, coming on Tuesday on our program, special edition with Ron Lurie, the director of Killing Reagan. That's the latest Bill O'Reilly movie adaptation of his popular books with Martin Dugan, and that's coming up a week from Sunday on the National Geographic Channel. We'll also talk to Ron about his latest project, writer and director of the TNT pilot, Monsters of God. Ron Lurie joining us live, that's Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. And next Friday on the program, two series premiere next Sunday night, one on USA Network and one on Epics. We have the creators of both. From Eyewitness on USA, Adi Hassan, and from Berlin Station, Olin Steinauer and Bradford Winters. They're all with us live 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here exclusively on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Jimmy, it's very interesting that you're doing this show at a time when the telenovela genre is trying to be modernized. Whether it's Telemundo trying to put more contemporary themes in their shows, like Bobby Mizzou dealing with immigration, whether it's trying to bring humor to some of these shows, whether it's trying to bring social issues into the program as opposed to just the romantic boy meets girl, boy meets girl, the parents are all over the place, the grandmother's evil kind of thing. Do you find it very ironic that you're doing this show at a time when sort of the whole idea of telenovelas is trying to change or trying to upgrade its image?
It's certainly interesting. I mean, it's actually telenovelas have become so pervasive, too, that they're on American television. We just don't know it. You know, Jane the Virgin is a send-up of telenovelas. That's what it is. You know, and there have been a few. There have been a few now that have been on and off TV. It certainly is. It's interesting, and, you know, I hope that I hope it draws more people to our show because it's like, you know, these are things, like you said, like you explained about Telemundo sort of changing the way that they air these shows and how they come back now as a serialized thing instead of just doing quickly 130 episodes, you know, and then done forever. certainly being inside Telemundo as they're making those changes was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. What is a day with these actresses? What are they like? How much time they get in their character, work with the writers, work with the directors, get blocking? As you said, it's sort of like a hyper life that these people, both actors and actresses, are living.
Once they have a role, it's super intense. It's so intense. It's like Telemundo is kind of it's a big machine, you know, and it's kind of like, I would imagine on a scripted show on American television that, you know, you're working with a director and you're working with the same kind of people. You're working with a director on a single role for a single scene. You do something 5 or 6 takes. They go through like 7 or 8 pages a day. On these shows, they go through the pages so quickly. It's like sometimes you get 2 takes and then you're done. So they have to be able to snap into character very, very quickly because they don't have the time to kind of work with. They don't have the time to work and rehearse, really. They kind of have to do all that on their own time before showing up to work, and then they go through, you know, half an episode of the show in a single shoot day. So it's actually really insane how good they are. They have to be so good at just finding the character, snapping into it, doing the scene, getting it right the first time, and being ready to move on to the next thing, you know?
And it's amazing sometimes the kind of performances that these actors and actresses and telenovelas do. You look at someone like, for example, Keiko Castillo, who did Lorena Del Sur, which is now Queen of the South, wrapped up his first season on USA a few weeks ago, going into the second season because of ratings next year. And I thought her performance was marvelous, and it was very interesting. A lot of Telemundo, actually at one point, was saying, let's put her up for an Emmy Award. But I thought what hurt was the production itself. One of the issues we've talked about with telenovelas has been what I call the over-the-top music, where 30 to 45 seconds into every single scene, you get this music out of Jaws or this music like End of the World, which has nothing to do with the show. And you sometimes wonder, do the people who edit the music see the show itself? And sometimes, but I have to admit, we are starting to see a change there too, where, particularly with Telemundo novelas, many of them are produced in the U.S., that we're starting to see more sensitive music. It looks like the editors are saying, hey, we can't do the show the way we've always done it because it doesn't make sense, and we want to be taken seriously as an art form. So either we're composing music directly for the show, or if they can't do that, picking music that's more sensitive to the scene as opposed to blasting it so that you can't even hear sometimes the actors say their lines.
Yeah, you kind of get, I think in the old world of telenovelas, you kind of get that thing like you were describing where it's like really crazy over-the-top music that doesn't quite make sense with what's happening. And that's sort of, in our show, you know, we do a little bit of a send-up of that where the dramatic moments are, through music and through editing, we make them feel even more dramatic than they are, although they're pretty dramatic even on their own. And the funny, unexpected moments really come out of nowhere, and it's all accentuated with music the way it would be in sort of a classic telenovela as you're describing it. It's a lot of fun.
How did you find the women that you profile here? Did you have like an open casting call? Was it a case of just dropping on Telemundo and having them say, hey, we see these women, we think they've got a lot of promise or potential in the field?
Well, we were developing the show for a while, so we talked to a lot of different women. We settled on it's basically through Telemundo. You know, we relied on them being an American English, mostly English speaking company that we are. We relied on them to kind of guide us to the right characters, the people who were likely to get roles, the people who had been around for a while, people with interesting backgrounds and interesting personalities who all sort of knew each other already. So this way, we weren't, you know, pretending that there was a dynamic between people that didn't really exist. So over the course of the roughly, I think it was a year almost that we were developing the show, we talked to a lot of different actors and actresses through Telemundo and really just narrowed it down to the people who partially we were looking for people who spoke English because we're doing a show for English television. So that was part of it, but partly these are just the best, funniest, craziest people. They were the most fun. They knew each other. They had rivalries already established. They had backgrounds and they had real ties to the world in Miami, to the whole world of Telemundo and telenovelas and all that. So they were just the best people who were interested in doing the show, you know?
And speaking of backgrounds, one of the people you profile is Liliana Murillo, who is the daughter of one of the most popular Spanish language celebrities ever, Jose Luis Rodriguez, great singer, known as El Puma, also was a telenovela actor for a long time. Another person was one of the co-hosts with Don Francisco on Saturday Gigante, and ironically, Don Francisco is now doing programs for Telemundo, having having wrapped up Saturday Gigante after so many decades on that channel last September. So it's fascinating to see the range of people you have and also the range of backgrounds. Some of them were models, some were actors or actresses, were actors in other places, some were even in the area of news or sports broadcasting. It really is amazing sometimes the background that many people have.
Yeah, it's a lot of them come to telenovela. Doing actually performing in telenovelas is just one thing that they all do. You know, they all also have other things that they work on. Because like I said, if they don't happen to get a role during a given season, they need to do something. So, you know, the one you were talking about from Sábado Gigante is Cici Fleitas. She was on that show, I think, for 7 years. And now, you know, she goes out for telenovelas. She's been in a few films. She was recently in a Spanish language film. I'm going to massacre the Spanish, so I'll say it in English. It's called Love and Lust. And one of the storylines in our show is they're actually trying to put together an English language version of that movie. And she tries to get the same role in the English language version. Her whole thing, Cici, is trying desperately to cross over into the English language market, the American market. She believes herself to be the next Sofia Vergara. She thinks she's going to cross over and become a massive star. Sofia, as you know, is like one of the most highly paid, highly successful actresses working today. And Cici's whole thing is I'm one or two roles away from having that same breakthrough. So all season long, that's what she tries to do. And the thing that kind of sets off the whole series, Rocanel, who shows up and has sort of a dark past, when she gets that role in the first episode, which airs tonight, it throws an enormous wrench into Cici's plan and kind of ruins the whole scheme that she has to break over into the English market. But yeah, they're all multi-talented, and they all do so many different things, and they're all trying to do so many different things, even in the world of our show. Liliana doesn't even do telenovelas anymore. She actually got out of it, and she told us it's in the show tonight. But she talked about it. She said it's actually too dramatic. The drama and all of the competition and the backstabbing and the madness, it was too much for her. So she just doesn't – she's like, I don't need to do this anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. But she's still friends with all the people who are in that world. So she's very much she's a very big part of our show. She's actually my favorite person on the show, my favorite character. She's a lot of fun.
Jen, we're going to pause for a few moments. We want to get a couple things in and let everybody know, of course, where we're at because we're right around the top of the hour. We're speaking with Jerry Carita, and he is one of the executive producers of My Life is a Telenovela. It's WeTV's new series premiering tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Coming up, we expect to have joining us live, I believe, from Los Angeles, Kiki Melendez, the organizer of last week's multicultural sizzle reel upfront groundbreaking event here in New York, coming to L.A. next Thursday and maybe beyond at a place near you after that. So stick around with us. If you have a question or comment for Jerry or Kiki, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll try to throw in another Hurricane Matthew update before the end of our show at the bottom of the hour. So more ahead, and we'll get to that after we pause for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com for the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Connect Safely. It's all about Internet safety, Internet protection, privacy, piracy, et cetera, et cetera. Get the bottom line of all that on Connect Safely at every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Bobby Televine. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour for our 90-minute edition wrapping up your week on this Friday afternoon. 75 degrees top of the hour here in New York. Down in Florida, they are still getting Hurricane Matthew from Jacksonville, Florida on Category 3 storm. Going around 41 miles east-northeast at 115 miles per hour, gusting 140 miles per hour. The movement is north-northwest at 12 miles per hour. It looks like it's going to hit the Georgia coastline near Savannah late tonight, early tomorrow morning, and may hit landfall around Charleston, South Carolina, right now projected at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, and then get out to sea on before Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, Sunday between dawn and noon Eastern Time. Again, if you know people that are in the area, please urge them to get out of the area ASAP, go inland, go to shelters, wherever they can go. They still have hours, but the hours are dwindling, and this is a brute of a storm. Even when it hits South Carolina, it will still be with over 100-mile-an-hour winds. Storm surge, big two, maybe as high as 5 to 10 feet, and maybe up to 15 inches of rain in some areas. Already one death in the Miami area. We don't know yet about the Bahamas. Over 300 dead in Haiti. This is maybe not the most catastrophic storm ever, but it is a very big storm with a very huge punch. Don't take it lightly. If you know people in the area, get on the horn with them and make sure they get out of harm's way as soon as possible. We are awaiting Kiki Melendez. She is the actress, talk show host. At one point, she did a television talk show a number of years ago, and she is the organizer of the Multicultural Sizzle Reel Up Fund, an event that took place last Friday here in New York, showcasing 10 new pilots for series produced by people of color, women of color, including Latinos, and by the way, most of them done through her own production company, Latin Hollywood Films. We're expecting her at any moment, but right now, we continue our conversation with Jerry Carita, the executive producer of My Life is Hilladella, premiering tonight at 10 p.m. on WeTV. Jerry, with all the characters you had and all the situations you had, was it very easy to leave things on the cutting room floor?
Oh, Lord, it's painful. It's hard. It's hard. There's so much good stuff that just didn't make the show. Just, wow. Honestly, yeah, like there's so many funny moments and just additional scenes. Like, you know, we didn't plan the whole thing out. So we didn't know what we were going to be shooting. We didn't know when we started out on a given day, we'd have some idea. We would know, you know, okay, Cece has a photo shoot today, or we're going to be on set with Raquenelle during a catfight scene. But we didn't know how those things would play out, you know? There are so many things that we got into that just when you're finally sitting down and editing together 8 episodes of a series, you know, things don't make sense anymore. Things you filmed 3 months earlier as a setup because you thought in your head, okay, they're going to do this, and then later this other thing might happen. When that other thing doesn't happen, it just ends up on the cutting room floor. So there's a handful of things about their personal lives that actually ended up on the cutting room floor, which are pretty painful, pretty hard for me to let go. But they just, you know, the overall show has to not suffer for those little moments. So there are a lot of fun moments, mostly about their personal lives. You know, with Liliana, we were with her family for a little bit, and then we ended up not using a lot of that. There was some stuff. Adriana Catania, who's another major player on the show, we did a lot of stuff with her daughter that ended up, you know, some of that is in the show, but some of it isn't. Some fun moments that just, you know, we have such a limited amount of time to tell a story. You have 45 minutes, basically, 40 really, in an hour-long show. Once you take out commercials and graphics and all that stuff, you're left with, you know, 40 minutes times 8, and it's really just with all these characters and all the things going on in their lives, there just wasn't enough time for all the good stuff.
We got a few more minutes with Jerry, and if you have a phone call, question, comment, please get it in. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. We got a chat room as well. Simon Apple 0419. We welcome guest 999 in the room. Joined us around the top of the hour. Use the room. Either way, we hear you. And don't forget, you can still connect to others by using Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Jerry, how much creative freedom did Telemundo give you to cover their world? Were there any times when things got dicey, was like, maybe we shouldn't be showcasing this in front of an outside crew?
No, actually, their only requirement of us was that we not pretend things that didn't happen happened, or vice versa. They were very open. They allowed us in the dressing rooms. We were on set while they were filming. We had kind of unprecedented access over an insanely long period of time, and we used almost all of it. For part of the show, they filmed inside of a real prison, and it was a really dramatic time for Raquenelle, who spent time in a real prison. And doing that was very challenging and very personal for her and very hard. And the crew and the producers of Telemundo were just wonderful and very open, very, very open to letting us film wherever we wanted, and very trusting that we would, you know, represent them accurately and honestly. So they were great. Honestly, there were moments where I was like, oh, are they going to tell us we can't use any of this? But it never happened. And they've seen all the episodes, and they have enjoyed everything we sent them. So.
This program is being done by a company called Matter Content that people might not know by name, but actually this company has done quite a few interesting series, including a show that we covered last year called Halloween. It's coming back on GSN, I believe, around Halloween time. And then there's a little thing you do called Lip Sync Battle, which is about to do a live episode.
Yes, they are. We've done a lot of them. Some of our most successful shows for Lip Sync Battle have been tied to live events or movie releases. We did one earlier this year for the Star Trek Beyond premiere with Zoe Saldana and Zachary Quinto going head-to-head. It's a lot of fun. That show is a lot of fun to do. And ever since the first episode, the first one was Jimmy Fallon and The Rock. It you know, set a bar, a very high bar for entertaining and entertainment and success there. And, you know, every episode is kind of a challenge to reach it. And the celebrities who come on the show have gone above and beyond just to come and have fun and, you know, kind of let us dress them up and embarrass them a little bit, but all in good fun. And everyone walks away happy. It's a great, great fun show. It's still running. We premiere again next week. I think we come back for our third season on October 12th, next week, Wednesday night on Spike.
Mm-hmm. And what's in the pipeline for Matador? At some point, you want to do scripted, and at some point, maybe even do either a telenovela or a telenovela spoof or adapting a telenovela. Maybe we should adapt a telenovela, like what was done with Ugly Betty, Jane the Virgin, and more recently, Queen of the South.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a lot of fun. I would love for us to get more into scripted stuff. We are Lip Sync Battle is kind of an all-consuming thing. We're doing a few spinoffs. We're doing a Lip Sync Battle Junior that's going to be on, I believe, Nickelodeon pretty soon. We're developing shows with, you know, the usual suspects, History Channel, Discovery Channel. We've got a couple of car and truck and adventure shows in Alaska, like I think every reality production company does. We've got another show that we're in development with that I can't really talk about that much at WE that's going to be on, though, next year, early next year. We start producing in New York. That's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a lot of weird little projects, too. We do some live shows with Macy's. We do some stuff at Fashion Week. You know, we're doing we have a couple of projects in development right now at Netflix, which is kind of cool, you know, and it's kind of a new thing for us. It's great. It's a very busy time at Matador.
With Netflix, are you doing scripted or unscripted there? I'm asking because yesterday, Bella Majorin, the former Universal Television head who was let go of her job by NBC Universal a few months ago, just came aboard yesterday as the new head of their unscripted division, also working on co-productions. And a lot of people think that Netflix is about to make a major move into both unscripted television and reality competition shows.
Well, they've been developing a number of reality shows for a while. A couple of days ago, there was a story about it. They're doing one with Sly Stallone. They have a couple of big competition series that they're doing with some big celebrity names. What we're doing with them is a little of both. We have an unscripted project and sort of a variety show kind of project there. But you know, like I said, I can't really get into details about it yet because we're still kind of in talks. But you know, lots of good stuff here.
What do you got hybrids? The idea of doing scripted and unscripted in the same show. Nat Geo Channel is going to put on a program from Ron Howard and Brian Grazer on the Imagine People called Mars. It's an 8-hour miniseries that has elements of both. And Stephen David, who's having this program, has made a career over the last 4 or 5 years as to doing shows that combine like Making of the Mob at AMC and other shows like the American Speech Show for CMT and other similar projects.
Yeah, there are a lot of hybrid shows that are kind of other formats. Like if you look at anything on Discovery ID channel, you know, those are all interviews, so they're based on real stories, but those, you know, they recreate crimes. They recreate them and they film them, and obviously like in doing that, someone has written a script and kind of laid out how to shoot a specific scene and a specific crime. So those are kind of hybrids. I would say shows like, you know, live shows or improv comedy shows, The Comedy Bang Bang talk show is sort of a hybrid scripted, unscripted project. There's lots of stuff like that. And so, you know, we're doing something sort of in that vein where it's a little bit of both.
My Life is a telenovela. It's funny, but it also gives you a very perceptive look at an art form that has been the base of Spanish language television for years, and it's still evolving. And it'll be interesting to see how more it evolves in the months and years ahead. You can catch the program tonight on its premiere, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on WE TV. Check the local web app network is available in your area on cable and satellite. But more details of the program online, here's where you go, www.wetv.com. That's www.wetv.com. My Life is a Telenovela tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, produced by Matador content. Jerry Kreid, executive producer of the program, thank you for jumping in on late notice. Give our best to Todd and everybody else involved with the show. Congratulations on getting this off the ground. Looking forward to seeing it. And hopefully it has a terrific run all its own on that network.
Here's hoping. Thank you.
For sure. All the best. And again, thank you for jumping in. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Jerry Kreid, executive producer of My Life is a Telenovela, joining us live from New York this half hour and the half hour before, too, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We are still awaiting Kiki Melendez, the organizer of last week's multicultural sizzle reel upfront here in New York, going to Los Angeles next Thursday. And we'll give her another few minutes to get on the horn. But right now, I want to let you know that because of the situation with Hurricane Matthew and the situation with our guest today, we are not going to have the answer to our classic trivia question of the week. So here's what we're going to do. For the second week in a row, we're going to keep it in play through the weekend. And then we'll wrap it up if we don't get a winner on Monday. But let's see if we can get a winner over the weekend. Here's the question, and if you are the first with the correct answer, you can win the wonderful book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. Remember the series, and the movie, and then the series, The Night Stalker, starred Gary McGavin in an ABC Movie of the Week, and its sequel, and then a series about an intrepid journalist following the haunts of the supernatural week after week. The question, what was the Night Stalker, or Darren McGavin's character's, real name? What was the Night Stalker's real name? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and include your mailing address as well. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause Books and Cinema. It's all about the classic ABC mystery series of the 1990s from Mark Lynch, Mark Frost, and David Lynch, and which will be coming back next year in a new miniseries that Messrs. Frost and Lynch will write and David Lynch will direct, with many of the original cast members coming on back. Twin Peaks FAQ is one of the latest in the popular FAQ book series published by Applause Books and Cinema. Again, SimonApple04@yahoo.com is how you respond with your answer. And if you don't want to use that, use Twitter, #TWBT. That's Twitter, #TWBT. The Twitter option is made available on folks at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. And if you just missed the question, you can find it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Get involved with the contest. It's easy to win. So go for it, and all the very best. And no matter what, we will give you the answer to the question on Monday and start a new question on the program as well. It looks like, unfortunately, we are, for the second week in a row, we're not going to have Kiki Melendez from Multicultural Sizzle Reel up front. We will find out what happened, what caused the breakdown in having her on, and we will get her on as soon as possible, either next week or the week after. And we want to let you know that if you want to know more about the Multicultural Sizzle Reel up front, especially those who may be tuning us in from Los Angeles, where we'll be taking place on October 13th, next Thursday, here's where you go online, www.lhfilms.tv. That's www.lhfilms.tv. That stands for Latin Hollywood Films. That's Kiki Melendez's production company. Melendez, incidentally, was once a Spanish-language talk show host for a series that ran on Galavision called Kiki Desde Hollywood, Kiki from Hollywood. So anyway, we're sorry we can't have her on today. We'll find out what caused the breakdown, and we will shoot to have her on maybe as early as Tuesday's program or next Friday. We'll see where we go. So stay tuned. We'll let you know when she will come on, and we hope the third time will finally be a charm. Again, I want to thank both of our guests for being with us, the wonderful Ileana Douglas from Turner Classic Movies Trailblazing Women Festival, and just a moment ago, Jerry Kreid, the executive producer of My Life in Televale. You can catch that tonight with its premiere at WeTV, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Before we leave you, one final talk about Hurricane Matthew. Once again, it is still a Category 3 hurricane. Next information update will be at 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific Time. The winds, again, are 150 miles per hour, gusting to 140. It is right now in the area of Jacksonville, Florida. That's where the eye of the storm is. It is expected to go up the Georgia and South Carolina coast late tonight, dawn tomorrow, and then maybe hit landfall around Charleston, South Carolina, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Again, if you know people in that area along the coastline, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, even North Carolina, up to and including Cape Hatteras, please encourage them to get out of that area ASAP. Time is afoot. And you can stay tuned to local radio stations, TV stations, cable, all these channels, the Weather Channel, et cetera, weather.com, Weather Nation with the latest information. Again, the latest update on Hurricane Matthew will be at 5 p.m. Eastern time, less than 40 minutes from now. And also, I'm sure that many of our Blog Talk Radio hosts and producers will have updates on Hurricane Matthew as the afternoon, evening, and tomorrow goes on. And, of course, we wish everybody who is impacted by the storm down there the very, very best. And hang in there. We will get through this together. Next week, 3 episodes of Tomorrow We Televise, including our next one on Columbus Day 2016. That's Monday. And joining us will be the creator and executive producer of the new epic scripted series, Graves, starring Nick Nolte as an ex-president who might be off the rocker more than he thinks. And that's Josh Michael Stern. Also on the program, the creator and executive producer and stars of one of the entries in this year's New York Television Festival, currently a series on Funny or Die, now available on smart TV sets and smart devices. The pilot is called @ApplePosterPD, Ryan Gallen and Julia Wattenshine Gimple will join us. Next Tuesday, special edition with the director of Killing Reagan coming next Sunday night to National Epic Channel, Rod Lurie. He's also writing and directing a new pilot for TNT, Monsters of God. We'll talk about both of those podcasts. And finally, on Friday, two very exclusive interviews, the creator executive producer of the new USA Network series, Eyewitness, Adi Hassan, and the creator executive producer of the new epic series, Berlin Station, also premiering next Sunday night, Ovid Steinhauer and Breakthrough Winners. And coming up in upcoming episodes later this month, we'll have live from Australia, the creator executive producer of the new series of the cult movie, Wolf Creek, Greg McKeon. Also, we'll have CNET News senior writer, Joan Feldman. Saw her recently at the New York Media Festival here in the Big Apple. And we will have a live exclusive interview later this month with the head of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Julie Menon. A lot of things happening in her office, including a number of ways to expand diversity and production of TV series here in New York. Julie Menon from Mayor de Blasio's Office of Media Entertainment, exclusive interview that's coming up on Friday, Monday, October 24th, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Again, thanks to our guests for being here. Thanks to all of you for tuning in on this near 90-minute edition. And if you came in on the program late or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, and we had some goodies this week, including an exclusive on Wednesday with the co-star of Divorce on HBO Sunday night, Thomas Hayden Church, Academy Award nominee and Emmy Award winner for Broken Trail, the AMC miniseries of 10 years back. Go to our homepage. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast version. It's available on iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV, check it out on the iTunes podcast app. We're along with other Blog Talk Radio programs. Remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our program today? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going, including the effort to try to expand diversity for women and women of color in the medium? We really love hearing from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And I do respond to emails in 24 hours. Please use that. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, you can use that email to participate in our classic trivia question of the week. We also have a feature that we do regularly called A Show to Know. If there's a TV show that you like, you think doesn't get enough attention, whether it's broadcast, cable, syndicated, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, etc., let me know. If we use your thoughts on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. So please get them out there. We don't know what the thoughts are unless you let us know. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or find me on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. We always like what you have to say. Why? Because what you say matters. And one last time, please, 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 be careful out there. Be safe and be great this weekend, especially if you know people in the area of Hurricane Matthew. And please stay in touch with local authorities and local news agencies about what is happening with that storm. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Amazon.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Remember, you can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want and get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com. Amazon is an Amazon company. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful, great, and safe weekend. We'll be back here Monday, Columbus Day, 2016. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.